Sometimes it feels like the sun will never rise, like the birds will never sing again. Believe in a power greater than what you are going through. When you don't know what to do, keep breathing.
That's right. When you don't know what to do, just keep on breathing. From the City of Angels in Los Angeles, welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the caregiver's caregiver at caregiverdave.com, along with my lovely co-host, former mayor of a California beach town and best-selling author, Debbie Peterson. However, she won't be joining us today, but I'll introduce her anyway. Anyway, we're also coming to you live and on demand 24/7 on numerous syndicated radio and podcast networks on 26 global audio video platforms, including iHeartRadio, iTunes, YouTube, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Vimeo, Stitcher Radio. The list goes on and on. In fact, we're proud to be voted number one caregiver podcast on FeedSpot out of thousands and number one caregiver podcast of the top 50 on Player FM. And we have an especially exciting show planned for you today. David Longman is a 39-year-old. He's originally from Miami, Florida, who lives alone in Woodstock, Georgia now. He recently became ill at the beginning of December 2023. He's been fighting with his health for over 4 months. He experienced God's presence and love from friends and family throughout the pain and confusion and loss of his bodily control. And he is now working toward emotional wholeness and regaining his physical health. Before we get started, I want to thank my last week's guest on forgiveness, Catherine Uzzalo, Power of Forgiving Self and Others for Caregivers. And just a reminder, you can watch or listen to that interview and all our interviews on our membership website, caregiverdave.com, or any of our other 26 global audio and video networks that I mentioned earlier. All right, enough of that. Dave, it's so great to have you on the Caregiver Dave show.
Thank you, Dave. I really appreciate you making time for me to share this story. I believe it's going to impact a lot of people and touch them in many avenues of their life.
That's why you're here. And before I ask your first question, I always like to ask my guests just who is David Longman and why was he placed on this earth?
That's a good question. So I believe God has a particular plan for my life to help lead other people to almost be like a leader like Joshua. You know, Joshua was a leader for the people of God that helped the people to transition when they lost leadership, to get to the promised land, to fight the needed battles they need to fight, to get people over the hump. And just my life in general has been so much tragedy and turmoil and challenges and times where, you know, I could have been dead 10 times easily. Right. And, you know, so just my whole life has just been kind of preparation for, you know, the times that we're living in, you know. So I'm a child of God. You know, I love God. You know, he's everything to me. But it wasn't like that for many years. I thought God was evil for about 9 years. So I've really come around a full gambit and even becoming a Christian, realizing, is God really good? Does God really love me? Do I have to work for him? And some of this definitely comes into my story of getting recently ill because God was trying to basically show me how much I was loved. In the story, when I share, you'll see how God did that through this whole tough illness that came out of nowhere, pretty much.
Well, tell us what happened on December 8th, 2023.
So I went up to Spencer, North Carolina, and they had a dirt bike school up there that was doing flat track training. So I decided to go up there. I've heard a lot about the program, and I thought it was a beginner program. It was an advanced program. Oh. And basically, in the middle of the first day, I had a crash on the oval track, crashed, crushed my left knee, my left ankle. Oh. So the guy running the program was like, hey, you know, let's take a break. I don't want you to fall on that knee and ankle again. It's going to be so sore, you won't be able to ride for the second day. So no problem. I've ridden and raced motorcycles for a little while now, so I'm used to the wrecks and things. But what I didn't realize was even when I went home to ice my knee and my ankle, I woke up in the middle of the night crying in pain. And what I didn't realize at that time was I had internal bleeding that actually went into an absence in my body in a mass. And I didn't know that because I'm just like, well, I just got to, you know, hey, I just hurt my knee, my ankle. Let me get on with it. But from that point on, I had trouble walking. Like my right side was very weak compared to my left. And, you know, that's kind of what happened initially.
They didn't recommend you go to the hospital or anything? So you got checked out?
No, because, I mean, in the dirt bike motocross game or in road racing, you crash all the time. So people aren't really like, hey, let's just drive to the hospital. We've crashed 10 times today. That's not kind of how it is. You're just kind of like, all right, you know, you see how you feel. And basically, I was back riding after that accident, maybe within 20 minutes. I was riding on the other course and came back the next day and rode. So that's what happened initially, but that led to a lot of problems down.
Wow. So what happened next?
So I got back to Georgia, rather. Well, I drove. But I just felt soreness from the riding. I didn't necessarily feel anything like extreme, but I have a very high tolerance for pain. So that unfortunately caused me a lot of problems also. So when I got back, the first thing that I noticed was, you know, by the next week, so about a week later, I had some old stitches on the right side of my neck and they started itching me. So I started, you know, rubbing them with my fingers. Well, it ended up getting red, big, infected, and pus came out. So now I had this issue of the internal bleeding I didn't know about, plus this bacterial infection because my neck got infected. The stitches were from 2000. I had a car accident and broke my jaw. But the way they did the stitching, it left almost like a hump or a bump that almost had like a spot that you could reopen. And so that caused issues. So I started getting sleeping at night, feeling hot, feeling cold, not really sleeping. Infection. Then at that point, I basically couldn't sleep for 3 months after that point. Started having a lot of pain in my neck. My whole neck swelled up. There was lumps, a big lump on the right side of my neck, looked like a tumor. Another lump on my left. All kind of issues in my body. Started getting pain in my body. And in my mind, I was like, well, I just got to tough it out. You know, hey, I live alone. I just need to pray and I just need to hang tough. So I never thought in my mind, hey, I need to go to 911. I need to call 911. I need to go to the emergency room. I was just like, I just need to tough it out. So I kept pushing through that whole incident. And as every day went by, I was getting sicker and sicker and sicker and sicker. Started having a lot of pain, but only night, big pain at night. So I'd be crying, screaming, pains all over my body. And again, I just was like, well, I just got to tough it out. You know, I'm probably just something is a cold or a flu is just going through me. I just got to tough it out. So that's where I was then. And, I bought a new motorcycle at the same time for me to go to the track. And I was like, oh, well, it's wintertime in Georgia. Let me try to trailer the bike down to Miami to the homestead area down there and go ride the bike on track where the weather's better.
You are a glutton for punishment.
So I basically said to myself, oh, well, I got to get all this going. So I basically just pushed through work, didn't really sleep much, was trying to get the whole trailer set up, everything with U-Haul, and the bike was delayed, and rode two sessions, and I basically mean, you go out and ride again, you're going to crash, and you're done. So by the next day, the 24th, is when all this thing started hitting me extreme. Because it's like I wasn't resting, I wasn't taking care of myself, and then from December 23rd is when this illness started to go into full effect. Be in pain all night. I had my mother sleep in the same bed as me. And all night I'm moaning in pain. I'm getting up. My body's hurting me.
Why didn't your mother, which is like mothers, force you to go to the hospital?
To be honest with you, I have gone through so much, you know, extreme sports, skateboarding, dirt bikes, ATVs, where I've gotten, you know, had pain and hurt before, and if I'm not really like, hey, I need help, I'm crying, let's go. And then not on top of that, my family is a Caribbean family. So Caribbean families, you kind of grow up, you cut yourself, let's put some Jamaican rum on that and get you back on the field. It's kind of, I don't know, we're not really a family that says, oh, hey, something's wrong with you, we need to go to the hospital.
Yeah, but you're crying at nighttime.
Not normal, for me at least growing up.
Yeah, but you're crying at nighttime.
Yeah.
With your mother.
Yeah.
Are you telling me she never told you, David, go to the hospital now? She never said that. Don't lie. She's standing right by you, right?
Not at that point. That was later on.
All right, go ahead.
At that time, she didn't. At that time, because for me, I was really, for me, a lot of the pain I was having, it was like, at that point, it was really bad lower back pain. There was pains in my right hip flexor. But in my mind, it was like, okay, I must have pulled something, or I just got to tough it out. So within a couple of days, I knew I was extremely tired, but in a couple of days, I had to drive back to Georgia, another 11 hours. And when I got back up there, I had a cousin of mine come up to visit me, and then started learning that my environment wasn't the healthiest environment. So just my home alone, how it was set up, was actually affecting my health. The air quality, the air quality I had, just even my garage, I had a lot of chemicals in my garage that was leaking into my house that was making me even more sick, because I had vehicles leaking automatic transmission fluid and other chemicals that was bleeding through the house. So as I started addressing those, I started getting a little bit better, got a little bit better, but then I still had the pains. And I was living on my own by this point. And so basically what happened was I had a really bad incident when I tried to, and not to get too graphic here, but basically, you know, I had to use the bathroom. I ended up, you know, having diarrhea, and I said, oh, well, let me go to the shower. I felt like I was going to just black out. Well, I ended up blacking out in the shower, fell down, twisted my knee, cut my foot. While I was passed out, feces came out of my body. And then when I woke up to try to figure out what was going on, I remember just trying to push the shower door open and just screaming for help. But I live alone. So I'm, help, help, help. And then I realized, oh, my God, there's nobody here. And I said, God, please get me out of this. And I had to try to get myself out of the situation. And then eventually I ended up calling my mother. I said, Mommy, I'm in bad shape. I need help. She says, I'm coming. And she basically dropped everything, you know, and it was around January 23rd, and just left her job in Miami and came straight up to see me that evening. And just to tell you how affected my environment was, she even had a problem that night. So she came in, and again, the chemicals and stuff was getting to her. She almost had like kind of like a seizure thing with the light bulbs I had. And I just realized this, the home environment was actually fighting against me trying to get better.
Let's fast forward. You finally go to the hospital. What made you finally go to the hospital?
There was a woman in my people group of my church that God woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning and said, you need to call David Longman. Yeah. And she ended up calling me. She says, look, hey, I heard, you know, that you're not doing well. There's a nurse practitioner I know. You need to go see her. I said, look, and at this point I had edema. So I couldn't sit up for more than 25 seconds without pain. I couldn't walk for more than 30 seconds. So I was bedridden, lost a lot of weight. I couldn't eat, pretty much only 700 or 1,000 calories a day. So I was getting super weak, no appetite. And I said, look, I can't go anywhere. I can't get out of this bed. I can't move. So she says, okay, we'll have her come over. So the woman came over, and when she came to check me out, she goes, look, you're fully anemic. You have extreme edema, and your swelling is so bad on your right leg. She's like, you clearly have lost a lot of weight. You're extremely weak, and there's a mass that could be cancer that's underneath your stomach. It's this huge mass that's blowing up half the size of your stomach. Mm. And when she said that, and she says, look, if you don't go, you know, to get help, you're not going to make it. And when she came to my house saying that, it kind of put aside all my fears of doctors, of what could happen to me in the medical system, or, you know, could somebody make a mistake? Because I got sick in 2019 and was diagnosed with lupus. $100,000, 28 days in the hospital, 4 different hospitals, multiple things going on, going blind, all kind of issues. So it caused me to be hesitant to go back in there, especially what has happened since 2020, the changes in the medical industry and things like that. It was, but when she said that, you know, she left, and then I called 911, and obviously it was extremely difficult. I'm on the second floor, 15 stairs. So they had to make a rig to get me down there, and the pain is so painful when I got up, and I was praying. I was like, God, please. And I felt like the Lord cut the pain in half, got into the back of the ambulance, and they got me to the Cherokee Medical Hospital in Canton, Georgia. And right away, just started CT scanning to look for blood clots in my right leg, and tried to scan this mass. The mass was so big that they couldn't even see really what was going on, because it was blocking the kidney at extreme levels, so they couldn't put contrast. And then it just started ramping up, you know, and then my hemoglobin was extremely low. My sodium level was low. Pretty much I was dying. So there was about 3 times that I was actually dying that, you know, people helped me. So, you know, my friend, the nurse practitioner, and then my mom and cousin, they asked me to get a blood transfusion. I didn't want to do it. And because I was like concerned about the quality of the blood and whatever, and the pain I'm in and the psoria and all this, my cousin had to talk me into doing it. I ended up doing it, and they ended up saving my life. But as time went on, they started saying, there's this mass that keeps growing. It keeps growing. It's tied all around your veins. It's your kidney level's at 6. Like you're having renal failure. And that basically led to them saying, we got to put a stent in there and try to drain it out. So they end up doing that. Then they were saying this mass is still growing. So it went from the size of a burrito to about 2 feet long, kept growing, wasn't stopped. So they said, this has got to be sarcoma cancer. They're like, we can't deal with you anymore. And I said, what do you mean? They said, you got to go down to Atlanta. You need to go down to see the specialist down there. They deal with sarcoma cancer. I said, but how do you know it's cancer? Okay, we'll do a biopsy. So I did a biopsy and come to find out there was no cancer in it. But they still didn't trust it. So they said, well, we could have got a bad sample. And then I got transferred to Atlanta. And they were picked up where the other folks left off. But then they realized this is way more complex. So we did another biopsy, found out it still wasn't cancer. And they said, oh, there's some, you know, they started connecting the dots. And, okay, what happened? The dirt bike wreck, my lupus getting out of control, bacterial infections, all led to this big mass in my body.
You'd make a good episode on Dr. House.
Oh, man, it's something else, man, you know. And while this was going on, you know, especially those times where I was stuck in my house, the loneliness was extreme. And one of the biggest challenges was the pain is so intense, because it only was happening at night. Then the pain started happening throughout the day. So it wasn't just, oh, I'm going to have this pain from, you know, 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock in the morning. No, it was, now it started happening all day. The pain was a lower level, but it was all day long.
So the mass was the main thing they're looking at now, huh? The mass was the main thing that they're looking at?
Yes. So they ended up finding out that it was a seroma. So basically, people have seromas if they have a surgery, but usually they go away. But because the lupus was causing this absence and it was attacking my kidney, it was making this huge, like, space. And the space kept getting filled with the dirt bike wreck. The internal bleeding went into there. The bacterial infections went in there. It just kept putting all these things in there, and it just kept growing. And then eventually they had to, they drained 1.4 liters of fluid from it. And then they installed an external drain for a week, and then it went down to half the size. And then we scanned it again. It went up a little bit, then it went down, and it went down to a quarter of the size. So they're saying now that it's going to go away on its own. Obviously, I couldn't walk. I couldn't lift my leg, especially the right leg. And so they tried to get physical therapy and occupational therapy in there. And while this was going on, there was people, because people didn't see me at church. They didn't see me at the normal prayer on Tuesday. They didn't see me there on Wednesday. They didn't see me there on Sunday or Friday morning men's meetings. People would say, "Hey, what's going on with you?" I said, "Oh, I've been ill." But they didn't realize how serious it was. And then finally, when a friend of mine, visited me, then this is when the flag was raised and many people started praying for me, hundreds and hundreds of people. And people started hearing the story. And, it just, for them, it was like, wow, here's a guy that one second he was all right, next second he's about to die.
And what happened with the prayer? What happened when people started praying for you?
Well, when people started praying, it was really remarkable because, I was asking God before when I was at my house to take the pain away, and he wasn't doing it. The pain was so much. I'll be begging him, tears in my eyes, "Please, God, please." Night after night, he never took it away, but his presence was with me. And later on, when these folks started praying, obviously God started helping me, giving the medical people the resources they need, getting my appetite back up, getting my sodium levels back up, getting the blood levels back up, just started getting the lupus under control. From prayer and one from prayer, but two from what the medical folks were doing, because now I was in a hospital and they were trying to treat what was going on the best they could. Sometimes when they would treat stuff, it would go the wrong direction. But for the most part, they would try the best they could. They realized we got to treat one thing at a time. If we do multiple stuff, it causes more problems. What impacted me tremendously was I just honestly never really felt, loved by my family or loved by people. Now, I would do stuff, have one-way relationships. "Hey, I'm going to church. Let me pray for you. How are things going? How's your family?" But I wouldn't invite anybody to my house. So part of it was my house isn't clean enough, or I don't have enough glasses to serve people and whatnot. But it was just that it was like I was afraid. I wanted to look a certain way. But when I lost all the control when I got sick, at that point, it was like, I have no control. I can't walk. I can't use the bathroom. I have all these issues. I have no appetite. I'm constantly in pain. I'm moaning all the time. I'll be just moaning all day long, moaning in pain. When people started showing up, texting me, praying for me, my family, four of my family members came up, drove up here, or flew up from Florida. I didn't even ask them to come up. They came up, and I just started, all of a sudden, I just started feeling love from my family and people, to the point where I just was crying hysterical. Like, I just kept breaking down because it was like everything I ever thought or felt about people, Christians, friends, family, all of a sudden it was like God was telling me, you think you're not loved, but I'm going to show you how loved you really are. I mean, there was a men's ministry that I'm part of. A guy and his wife came to pray for me. He says, I'm going to pray for you at the men's ministry. And 120 guys was praying and screaming out in a victory chant for 30 seconds. I mean, just the love that I felt through that, to be like, wow. And I'm looking at their faces, recognizing who they are. People coming and hugging me, holding me. Here's money. Here's food. Here's prayer. And it was just so beautiful because I'm like, wow, I'm valuable. God loves me. People care for me. My life matters. And in this incident, God has really shown me how much I'm loved and has changed me. We still have a long way to go, because I spent 5 weeks in the hospital, lost a lot of weight, lost a lot of strength. And now I'm working on the physical therapy, but even adjusting to life now, because it's like, okay, I'm back at home, but I'm downstairs. It's a different situation. I'm still on leave from my job. I'm still trying to work through these instances. So there's these emotional things that come up from time to time where you just feel like I can't do this, or this is too much. And you know, three times in the hospital, I had to just worship, because they would give you these bad diagnoses or these bad news, and it would just destroy your confidence. You feel you're doing good. All of a sudden, boom, they tell you got a blood clot. And you're like, I don't understand. Like, we've been doing everything, and now I got a blood clot? What does that mean? Oh, we got to install an IVC filter because this blood clot can go to your heart. Hey, we might have to go in and biopsy your kidney. Or, hey, we're going to have to drain this out. And, you know, the stress level and the edema that I had when they put me in these machines is just so painful.
Let me stop you right there. It's an amazing story, and I'm sure you can go on and on. We're running out of time, so I want to fast forward to how are you today, and what did you gain from this experience?
Every week I'm getting stronger. But to me, I think this was really in twofold. I think God wanted to change my character and to show me how much I was loved. But also it was kind of an attack as well, too, from the enemy, you know. So it's like a twofold thing. You know, it's like you think about the situation with Job. Like, Job was being attacked by the enemy, but at the same time, God was blessing him and showing him things about himself. And so, like, God was showing me how much I'm loved and appreciated, and then I can pour out that love to other people. And that, you know, and the thing I really want to say, my story, I think, helps people. If you're on the edge of suicide, or you're on the edge of dealing with your addiction, sexual integrity, or maybe alcoholism or drugs or whatever you might be dealing with, or just dealing with the challenges of life, you know, there's hope. You know, things aren't over, because I'm praying and asking God to take the pain away, and he's not doing it, but yet he's still with me. So his presence is enough, even when pain is not being removed. So for me, I think it's been something that God has used to show me how much I'm loved, but also to show me that I do need to take care of myself. Hey, if I would have, you know, gotten regular medical checkups and follow-ups and not been afraid to go get checked up, maybe things would have gotten handled sooner. Or how can I take better care of myself, have better self-care? So it's a combination of things. And also learning how to let go of control. Like, I'm a person where being stubborn, I want to control things, I want to look a certain way. That's independence. That's not going to get me to a place of wholeness in God or better relationships with other people.
If you have a way that people can contact you who want to maybe learn some more about you, or maybe even pray for you, because you're not out of the woods yet, right?
Yeah. So probably my email address. They can probably just email me there, because I know there's certain people that are in different countries or time zones. My email address is MrBanshee@yahoo.com. So that's MrBanshee@yahoo.com. People can email me there, and, you know, they just put in the subject, you know, just kind of what it's pertaining to, whether it's, you know, this video testimony. But yeah, definitely prayers would be good, you know, because I'm still transitioning. Just trying to get my hip flexor stronger. You know, stairs are difficult for me to climb, and working on that, and the aquatic therapy. You know, I know sometimes people just want to know, hey, what can I do in my situation? Or how, you know, how maybe, you know, what did you do in this? Because this is one example. I mean, I've lost 20 people in my life. So I've gone through tragedy on that side of the fence, you know, and I've gone through my own, you know, struggles and challenges with life. So you never know how you can give hope to somebody out there. So that's what I would say. But, you know, it starts with looking up to God, and it starts with looking up to other people that you can be inspired by and find hope. So, yeah.
Wow. Great story. And you would say that your faith has become stronger as a result?
Oh, tremendously. Because I think before I was a Christian that was doing things. I was performing. I'm at church. I'm at prayer. Hey, I'm praying for people. I'm encouraging them. But when was the last time I let them love me? When was the last time I let God love me? right? Not to say, oh, well, I'm performing for God, but it's like, God loves me whether I do anything or not, equally. Wow, can I wrap my head around that one, that if I was the only sinner, he would die for me, that if he gave me Jesus, that makes me the most valuable thing on the planet? Because Jesus is the most valuable thing, so that means I have value and I matter to him. And if I matter to him, that means that I can love myself and I can love others. And then I can submit to God more. And I can say, you know what? God knows what's best for me. And he's the one that's going to be in control of my life. I can go at his pace.
That's right. You have to love yourself first, or you can't love anybody. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it, David. And thanks for sharing and being vulnerable. Remember, everybody out there that's listening, all our live shows become recorded pod and video casts on all your favorite platforms. And I would like you all to join my Caregiver Day Facebook community resource of 34,000 caregivers, lots of tools, resources, videos, this radio show, and much, much more. My website, caregiverdave.com. Everything is on there, the books, the blogs, the videos. And if you click the like or follow button on whatever platform you're watching or listening to this interview on, it helps us reach even more caregivers by improving Google search engine algorithms. So we thank you, all my listeners out there all over the world, for tuning in every Wednesday and making us the number one caregiver podcast radio show on the internet. So until next week, same time, same channel. May God richly bless you all. Bye-bye.
We are a community of caregivers that understands and supports you wherever you are in your journey. We are a place to connect with other caregivers, but more importantly, a place to get practical, actionable help. There are lots of ways for you to get support. First of all, you can download our welcome pack. This will get you started on your Thrive journey. Next, you can ask and get answers to your questions by posting them here in our private Facebook groups. You can also get live online support by attending one of our live weekly Connect webinars. You can get practical, actionable advice by listening to our weekly podcast. You can hear and read other stories about other caregivers' experiences. Plus, add your own in our weekly Share Your Story forum, posted every Tuesday in the Facebook group. You can access essential resources and download practical Thrive Solutions packs, all of which are geared to help you thrive as a caregiver. You can get lifetime access to all of our resources. Again, we're here to support you and help you thrive and to enjoy your life as a caregiver. And remember, this is a place to get hope, not just cope.
Sometimes it feels like the sun will never rise, like the birds will never sing again.